Rattlesnake Snap, Purple Vienna, Hillbilly Potato Leaf, Moonglow, Red Fig. Looking through a seed catalog can warm a gardener's heart even in the coldest of winters. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. We're going to start the hour with Tom Wahlberg, seed manager at Seed Savers Exchange in Decorah. We'll talk about some of Seed Savers' most popular varieties and some new introductions to the catalog this year. Horticulturists Richard Geron and Cindy Haynes will also be here this hour to answer your questions as you plan your garden. We also want to know what you're excited about growing this spring. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and it doesn't matter if the weeds got away from you last summer. In January, your garden is a blank slate, and the seed catalogs that arrive in the mail get a lot of us dreaming of and planning for spring. Horticulturists Richard Geron and Cindy Haynes from Iowa State University will join us in a few minutes, but we're going to start the hour with the man behind one of the most evocative seed catalogs to come out of Iowa. Tom Wahlberg is seed manager at Seed Savers Exchange in Decorah. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, and we have explored the history of Seed Savers here on Talk of Iowa in the past, and I know that it started as an exchange between people who would save their seeds and send them to each other. How, you know, looking at the catalog this year, obviously it's full of so many different varieties of everything you can imagine growing in your garden. Do you still get people sending you seeds that they save out of their gardens?
We do get people that's, you know, have had seeds in their family for, you know, really for generations, and we're talking heirloom seeds. You know, that would be a good example of an heirloom seed that somebody would want to send to have in the collection. And some of those collection varieties, every year we put into the catalog. So they're, it's not just, you know, something that we keep and sit on. It's part of the exchanges to make things available for everyone. So that's kind of neat. There's some great examples in this year's catalog, and I hope people will come and take a look.
Well, and tell me a little bit about your seed production operation now that Seed Savers has grown so large and you're receiving orders from people all over the place. What kind of land do you have devoted to producing seeds?
Right here at Seed Savers north of Decorah, we've got 890 acres, which really isn't a lot of seed production because that's primarily used for the preservation of the seed. So it's a number of isolation gardens. So we grow a lot of the seed here in smaller quantities, but we're pretty limited by what varieties we can grow commercially just because you need such a distance for so many of the crop types. So a lot of those we've got some contracted with local growers. We've got some, you know, contracted around the country. And it's quite a challenge every year. But the preservation varieties, now there's almost 25,000 in the collection, so those are grown out on a much more intensive, hands-on, hand-pollination type basis, which, I mean, that's what the 890 acres is really for.
With so many different varieties in your catalog, do you ever have a problem meeting demand for some of these more specialized seeds?
You know, it really hasn't been a problem as long as we're able to get sufficient quantity to offer it in the catalog. You'll see if you look through the catalog, there's usually it's offered in packets and then, you know, some small bulk quantities. And what we try to do is at least preserve the packet quantity. So if we start getting low on a seed, you know, we'll start to cut back on some of the bulk offerings and hope that it's still at least available to anyone who wants in a packet quantity.
Well, looking through the catalog is so much fun because you do have so many varieties. And for people who aren't familiar with Seed Savers and your history, can you explain what the goal is of Seed Savers and of offering all of these many different varieties?
Well, Our goal is pretty clear. We're a nonprofit, so it would be tied to our mission, which is, really conserving and promoting the garden heritage of America. So the commercial, the catalog, is really our funding mechanism, our primary funding mechanism to fund the mission of. And if anybody comes to the farm, we're happy to show them. The preservation and all the work that is done here. But we appreciate everyone's business, and every purchase of seed does go to support that mission work.
Well, what are some of your most popular varieties? Can you give me a couple of examples?
Sure. Most popular varieties are it's changed a little bit in recent years. I'd say kale is huge, Swiss chard, and spinach. It's gotten to be more of a health conscious crew. Surprisingly, stevia has gotten really popular. Mm. But if anybody has, or if you haven't grown that, it'd be a neat thing to grow. It's my kids love it. You can just pick a leaf off, and it's super sweet and kind of a novelty. But it's also, but then there's your favorites that probably haven't changed, dragon carrot, Waltham butternut squash, black beauty zucchini. Those are always really popular, and people will get those. And it's nice that they get those and hopefully try something new at the
time. And I have a picture of the dragon carrot in front of me. It's a bright red carrot. Where does that come from?
That was actually bred by John Navasio. And it's been around for a while now, but it's not just a beautiful carrot, but we did a carrot tasting here 2 years ago, and it was far and away what we thought was it's just the sweetest, tastiest, fresh-eating carrot that we had. So I'd say it followed by the Danvers after that. But it's a wonderful carrot. It looks beautiful. It tastes great. And it's one of our most popular.
Now, you have, of course, beautiful pictures in the catalog, which drive a lot of us to try different things every year. Do you have somewhere where you share what seemed to be the most popular at your tastings? Because, of course, I know you do a big heirloom tomato tasting and taste so many of these other things as well. How do we find out what tastes the best?
Well, every year we do some tastings. Maybe not the most popular, but I know this year the preservation crew did an onion tasting, so.
Yeah, that might be harder to sell tickets to.
Right, but I mean, I'm sure hundreds of varieties of onions that are in the collection, and so most that people have not heard of before. But, we've done lettuce tastings, and those are not generally public events. We do have a tomato tasting that's every year that's a public event. Mm-hmm. But you can find out about the other tastings that we do either, online. You can check seedsavers.org, and there's a blog. You can connect to forum and pretty much know what's going on at the farm. It's kept up to date, so it should be, week to week what's going on here and feel at least like you're aware of what's going on and what's tasting. What did well on the various tastings would be a good example.
Well, and of course, in the catalog, there are some tidbits that get shared, and I know that your mission is to keep heritage alive. There's a little article that Diane Ott Wheely, one of the founders of Seed Savers, shared about. It includes Grandma Ott's ground cherry pie recipe. And it starts with, "If I had a dollar for every time I heard someone say my grandma always had ground cherries in her garden, she made the best pies and jams, she'd be a rich woman." So there is a lot of heritage that comes along with these seeds as well. Do you have any particular varieties that you know the history of that came from Iowa?
Yes. Yeah, actually, you just mentioned Diane Ott Wheely. Her family brought over the German pink tomato, which is one of the founding varieties for Seed Savers. So, I can't call that. And, of course, not many of these would have originated in Iowa.
Right.
But there's a Wapsipinic and peach tomato, which is awesome. It won our taste test some years ago. It's, named after the Wapsipinicon River in North Iowa. And it's a super tasty, soft, fuzzy tomato. There's the Chelsea watermelon, real popular around 1900. from down by the Chelsea, Iowa area. And some of these, like I say, the Wapsipinicon, but also the Chelsea, they're awesome varieties. They taste super, but you'll never see them commercially grown. They're not going to be suitable for that, which makes them also a delight in your garden. But super tasty. The Chelsea maybe wouldn't travel real well, so it was popular at roadside stands, but it's pretty delicate, burst open on you, but...
Well, my husband and I recently spent a lot of time going through the catalog, and we're not good gardeners. We are those people who the weeds get away from every year, but every year in January, we think this year will be different. We will make it this year. But it's so hard to narrow down the selections. Everything looks so good and so much fun to grow. Do you have any advice for people on how to really whittle things down and pick a reasonable amount of things to grow?
No, I'd be a terrible one. Yeah, I always start out with a plan, and I always plant way too much. Container gardening is great. If you limit yourself to a certain number of containers or raised bed box gardening is great. You know, other than that, it gets pretty. If you've got unlimited space, it's pretty easy to get carried away.
Is there anything in particular that you are excited about growing this spring?
Yes.
Can you give me a couple examples?
Well, in the catalog, if you do get a catalog, the first pages are devoted to, like some things that we're introducing from the collection, which really are just not going to be available otherwise. There's one called a Hop McConnell Speckled Corn, which was amazing. We did a production of that on site this last year, and the ears were huge, and they're also beautiful. It's really neat.
And is this a sweet corn?
No, it's a dent corn.
Okay.
And really, the ears are as big as any I've seen. I showed them to one of my neighbors, who's a commercial farmer, grows, I'm sure, all the stack trait type stuff. But he was just amazed. Never seen anything like that. Such the ears were so big and round. Showed it to his extension agent and his seed guy, and same thing. They'd never seen anything that big, which is awesome. And it's also, the ears are either all white or all red, or they're speckled. So if you plant all white seed, you're going to get an assortment of white, red, speckled. There won't be, like you think of as the ornamental Indian corn, where there's, some white, some red, some speckled within the same ear. These ears are either all white, all red, or all speckled. It's really neat.
And the kernels are really pretty. So that would be, you could make cornmeal, you could make hominy.
Right. Yeah. Anything that you'd be looking for, corn flour.
All right. Well, we need to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. I'm talking with Tom Wahlberg. He's seed manager at Seed Savers Exchange in Decorah. He's going to stick around and answer some of your questions if you have specific questions about seed varieties at 866-780-9100. Richard Duran and Cindy Haynes of Iowa State University are going to join us in just a moment to answer your questions as well. This is Talk of Iowa.
Inch by inch. Row by row, someone blessed these seeds I sow. Someone warmed them from below till the rain comes tumbling down. Pulling weeds and picking stones, man is made of dreams and bones. Feel the need to grow my home.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and it's warmer today than it was. But here in the depths of winter, we are thinking about spring. And with me today is Tom Wahlberg. He's seed manager at Seed Savers Exchange in Decorah. We've been talking about the Seed Savers Exchange 2014 catalog of heirloom and open pollinated seeds. And joining us now is Richard Duran from Iowa State University Extension. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here today. Cindy Haynes is also here, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State. Hi, Cindy.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here, too. And of course, you are welcome to join our conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Tom is going to stick around if you have any Seed Saver specific questions. He's going to answer those. And of course, Richard and Cindy can help you plan your garden for spring or answer any other plant-related questions you may have. 866-780-9100. And we're going to start with a question. It's actually from Decorah, but it's not about growing something. It's about getting rid of something. This is from Ian in Decorah. I'm trying to eradicate garlic mustard from a wooded acreage in northeast Iowa, where the invasive plants are currently isolated to a few locations. Most of these patches consist of sparse growth in small areas, but some dense concentrations cover up to about 20 square feet. Since first identifying garlic mustard on the property about 5 years ago, I've attempted to halt its spread by pulling the plants out by the roots every spring prior to blooming and bagging them for removal. I know herbicides are an option, but I'm concerned about the effect on nearby native plants and wonder what will eventually grow back in the kill zones. Would controlled burning be a better option given the woodland environment? Because the patches are relatively confined, I've also considered smothering the areas with black plastic sheeting, but I don't know if this would be an effective method. What do you guys think?
Well, pulling out obviously is an option. It's important to get that before it goes to seed. You do have herbicides like Roundup, and Roundup basically kills only those things that you spray directly. So there shouldn't be any effect on other plants in the area unless they're sprayed. I think burning might be an option too. The DNR, I believe, does have a web page where they discuss these options as far as what you can do as far as control measures. And I would look at that and decide what might work best for me. But pulling, herbicides, and possibly burning might be options.
Well, and of course, he's been at this for 5 years. Mm-hmm. Pulling and bagging sounds like he's been very diligent. There's still going to be garlic mustard seed in and around the air. I mean, how can you actually eradicate it entirely, or do you have to stay on it every year no matter what?
It's very, very hard once it's well established because it's a very prolific seed producer. And so if you have a few plants that you don't see, that you don't destroy, and they're allowed to go to seed, then you really haven't gained any ground because they're such prolific seed producers. So you have to be very, very thorough, and it does take time. So once it's well established, it's going to be very, very hard to get rid of.
Okay. That's not very encouraging, but it is everywhere and getting to be more so every single year. Jim is on the line next in Dubuque at 866-780-9100. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
Thanks for taking my call. I had a question for the Seed Saver. When I was a kid, we had an apple orchard, and we had one tree in that we called a snow apple, and the peel was almost a violet red, a deep violet red, and it was white as white could be. The pulp was hard. I was just wondering, is there something like that still around, or is that?
I tell you what, I would be happy to, if you want to call back after the show to Seed Savers. We've got an orchard manager. We've over 500 apple trees on the farm here that we are preserving. It's possible he's got something like that, or he would be very interested in hearing what it is you're describing.
Okay, all right, and I would just call Seed Saver.
Yeah, Seed Savers, if you're online, seedsavers.org, the phone number.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, and Jim, before you go, I actually grew up on an acreage that had snow apples, too, and went on a search a few years ago to buy seedlings for my parents. And honestly, I can't remember where we got them, but we were able to find some. And they do sell some snow apples at Wilson's Orchard near Iowa City. So they are still around, and they are delicious, aren't they?
Yes, they are. There's nothing like them.
You can keep searching because you'll find some.
All right. Thank you. Wilson's Apple Orchard or seedsavers.org. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot for your call, Jim. The number to call with your question is 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Richard, I know we've talked about the fact before that seed catalogs seem to come in the mail in December.
They
and
do.
And that's one of the great ways to get through winter. Have you already made your orders and your plans?
This weekend. So I'm going to do it this weekend. I've kind of got some ideas, but I haven't actually made the order yet, but this weekend. So
what's your method? Because you heard me talking to Tom, it is a little overwhelming when you look at all these amazing options and you think, I mean, when we got to the tomato section, my husband's like, you know what, let's just grow them all.
Well, yeah, right. I like to look at new things and see if they sound of interest and see if they would be suitable for my landscape. And if they are, I might order those. But I also have certain areas that I need certain things, so I'll typically look at those. And there's always some new varieties. For example, with the typical garden patients, we have a disease now in patients, downy mildew, which is a big threat. So I'm looking at some of the New Guinea patients because they are disease resistant. And so there have been a couple new varieties on those. I think one is the Divine series, one is the Florific series, and I definitely want to buy some of those because I have a lot of shade. So,
well, and Cindy, I know that you have a fairly small home garden. Mm-hmm. Do you start things from seed for your home garden?
We do. We do start some things, and we direct seed some things because, you know, I've got a six-year-old now, so, and he likes sowing some of that seed. So we always sow some sunflowers and a few other things that we start indoors so that we can plant them outside. And there's usually a couple of tomatoes and some peppers in there as well.
And with the big horticulture gardens at Iowa State University, what kind of process do you go through with that? Do you get any say?
Yeah, we do. Richard and I and a couple of other people kind of decide on things that we want to grow there. And we put together these pretty massive seed orders, you know, usually from a couple of different places. And that usually happens in January so that we have that done and planned.
We need to do that soon.
I know. We need to do that soon. We usually do that sometime in January so that we can have that planned for February. So we can actually start to grow some of that seed usually in late February, early March.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. And Suzanne in Indianola actually wanted to respond to the call about the snow apple. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi.
Hi. What would you like to say?
I've had an apple called Snow Sweet from an organic orchard in Adel called Will's Family Organic Orchard, and these are the best apples I've ever had, and they sound just like what you're describing.
All right. Well, hopefully that sends him in yet another direction to find what he's looking for. Thanks a lot for your call, Suzanne.
Okay. Thank you.
Scott is on the line next in Des Moines. Hi, Scott.
Yeah, hello.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, I've got a question about stevia. I'm interested in growing some this summer, and I'd like to find out a little bit more about its viability in the Des Moines area, and I'll get off the phone and listen to the gentleman's response.
All right, Scott, thanks a lot for your call. Tom, you said stevia is getting to be quite popular.
It's very popular. It's also really a challenge to grow, so you'll want to definitely start that indoors as you would transplants. You can move it outside a little bit later on. But you hope to get maybe 50% germination, and that's if you do things perfectly. So, but you put the seed just right on the top of the soil. If you cover the seed, it simply won't grow. So keep it on top of the soil and keep it moist. Once you get your plants established, you should be able to put them into pots and put them outdoors as the season warms up.
All right, and it seems to grow well in Iowa if you can get it started?
Sure. Yep. We grow it at home, and we sell it as plants here at the visitor center. So we people are taking it. I'm sure it's available elsewhere, but it's quite a neat, tasty novelty, and it's doable. But it is a little bit difficult to get them established.
All right. Scott, thanks a lot for your call. And you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can also send your questions to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Tom Wahlberg, seed manager at Seed Savers Exchange in Decorah. And, of course, horticulturists Richard Giron and Cindy Haynes from Iowa State University are here. And next up, let's go to Patty in Des Moines. Hi, Patty.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I live in the Beaverdale area of Des Moines, and I have a large silver maple tree in my front yard. And I've tried to grow various varieties of hostas, you know, in the area under the tree and around it. And I'm just not being successful. I always thought hostas were indestructible. But I'm wondering if it's a water issue, that tree just soaks up all the available moisture, or a soil issue. And so if you could give me some advice on just how to start the investigation, that would be great.
Well, the main problem is the silver maple tree itself. It is a very, very strong competitor. It has a massive root system just below the ground, and so it gets most of the water nutrients in the soil. And then you also have the shading. So it's basically... it's just a very, very keen competitor. I guess I would try some varieties that are noted for their vigor as far as the hostas. For example, Royal Standard, which is a common one. Also, Hosta Lancifolia, which is a very common one. Varieties that are known for their extreme vigor. You know, some of those are very nice, they're very attractive, but they're not as vigorous. So I would look at those that are extremely vigorous and try those. The other thing might be to possibly work up the soil a little bit, if you can, just a little bit, and maybe fertilize periodically and water periodically during the growing season. That might help a little bit. But the main problem is the fact it's a silver maple, and they're just very strong competitors.
So if she's getting frustrated with hostas, do mm-hmm. you suggest a different ground cover for underneath a silver maple?
One possibility would be simply to mulch around it. Where you simply...
That's not quite as pretty.
No, it's not. But if you can't grow anything underneath it, it's better than bare ground.
Well, you can also, there are some ground covers you can give a try, and they're sold really small so that they might kind of get a foothold. The problem is it often takes a lot of ground cover to make any effect. So you could try vinca. You could even try... lily of the valley. You could do some of those other things that are pretty vigorous kind of ground covers that like the shade.
And I was thinking that if you did mulch around it, you can make a nice kind of a round area. And then at the very circumference, you could put maybe some hostas, a ring of hostas. Mm-hmm. So you have the mulch,
yeah.
But you also have the hostas kind of hiding maybe some of the mulch.
Well, and I actually have a fairly large area that we've converted to, you know, kind of a perennial area because grass doesn't grow in the yard. So we've gotten rid of most of the turf, you know, and we're focusing on perennial plants. But I that's kind of what I suspected. So I will look into those other varieties. I do have some vinca, and that seems to be doing okay. The hostas were doing fine until a few years ago, and I think maybe, again, just the drought. And,
yeah.
I was trying to limit watering to be conscious of of resources and so on. And so I think that gives me a very good direction. So I appreciate your answers.
All right, Patty, thanks a lot and good luck with that.
All right. Thank you.
You can join our conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. Marcy is on the line in Mechanicsville. Hi, Marcy.
Hello. I was wondering about planting garlic in the spring. I left mine in the ground too long this fall, and they rotted. So when is it? Can I plant them in the spring? And if so, when is a good time to do that?
Well, you can do it. They won't produce nearly as well. Typically, we like to get them in the ground in the fall. But I would get them in the ground as soon as you can, typically in early to mid-April.
Okay. All right.
And Richard, it sounds like you may be recommending that she just wait until fall?
Well, no, she can do it in the spring, but don't expect a whole lot as far as a big bunch of cloves. They might be quite small, but at least you've done it.
Right.
And
And you then can replant again in the fall.
Replant in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And can I get those from Seed Savers right now, or do I have to wait until the fall? Because I know they're a big fall.
Yeah, I'm not sure where you would get them for spring planting. I think it's generally the bulbs are for sale in the fall. We start shipping in September.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll just wait until fall. That sounds like a better plan anyway.
All right, Marcy, thanks
All
a lot
right,
for your
great.
Call.
Thank you.
And again, you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100 or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And I know we're going to let you go here in just a moment, Tom. So we have this tweet from Don, and maybe you can start with your recommendations. And if we don't get through all the recommendations, we can pick up after the break. But Don is wondering about recommendations for reading and seeds for a beginner gardener. Where would you start, Tom, if you've never done it before?
Did he say for weeding?
No, reading. Reading.
Well, weeding would be a good start.
Right.
Yeah. A beginning gardener, I guess I would probably start with direct seeded things, which are great. You know, you can put carrots and beans, onions, things that are gonna be fun. You'll be able to use them. They're not gonna take up a ton of space. A lot of the beans, if you want a trellis, you know, they're attractive also. You can, you know, kind of make a bit of a hedge. Any of those fun type varieties that have people have real good success with.
And do you have a favorite resource for learning about different kinds of seeds?
I guess that depends on how much you want to get into it. There's a book called Seed to Seed, which describes the whole process. If you're talking about wanting to save your seed for the next year, it would be an excellent resource. Walk you through everything that you need to do. I guess I'm not – we do have an assortment of books online, and some of those would be, you know, based towards beginners, but I can't think of what a good one would be right off the top
All right.
of my head.
Well, Tom, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Tom Wahlberg is seed manager at Seed Savers Exchange in Decorah. Their catalog, 2014 catalog of heirloom and open pollinated seeds, is out now. And, of course, you can also find a lot more information on their website as well. And some of us are just better at reading than we are at gardening. I know I fall into that category. So books are a great place to start. Richard Geron and Cindy Haynes from Iowa State University will stay with us to answer your questions. And you can join the conversation at 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, horticulturist Richard Geron of Iowa State University Extension and Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. They're here to answer your questions at 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And before we get back to the phones, Cindy and Richard, I want to give you a chance to answer Don's question, too, about any recommendations for reading or seeds for a beginner gardener.
We would typically suggest starting with our extension publications. We have a number of publications on vegetable gardening. We have one on starting plants indoors. We have one on suggested vegetable varieties or cultivars, so we would suggest starting there.
We would also suggest starting small. If you're a novice gardener, you know, it's easy to take on more than, you know, your eyes are often bigger than your stomach. So start a little small and learn a little bit by doing and asking your neighbors and friends. And there's a master gardener probably in your county, and there's a county extension office so that it can help.
All right. Well, and every time I have a question, if I search for an extension publication, it seems like you've answered pretty much every question out there in extension
publications. This is what Richard is good at.
Right.
So,
absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So great resources. This is a Facebook question from Christine. I begin, like so many of us, with the best intentions, but I'm terrible at watering my raised bed garden. How can I most effectively water my garden?
Well, one thing is you could put a mulch on it. Some type of mulch like grass clipping, shredded leaves, or something of that nature, because when you have bare ground, that bare ground dries out very quickly. So if you can cover it, that would help a great deal. As far as watering it, you might use like a soaker hose or something mm-hmm. of that nature, where you simply lay it on the surface And then you plug it, you just basically attach it to your hose.
All right, and you can just turn it on and leave it for a while. You don't have to stand there
right.
and be a part of it. And
right.
and that's more effective as well, right, because it actually gets the water to the roots?
Right, and you have very, less water going into the air, going on the plants. It basically soaks right into the ground.
Just don't forget to leave it on for 2 or 3 days.
No, you can drown them pretty easily.
You can
as well.
Drown them pretty easily as well.
Maybe set a timer.
Right.
All right. John is on the line next from Dubuque. Hi, John.
Hello. I'd like to know what the experts think of the hot water bleach treatment for heirloom seeds.
All right. Are you familiar with that, Richard or Cindy?
Well, I think there are some seed treatments that are removing some, you know, potential pathogens, fungal pathogens. I haven't heard of the specific hot water bleach treatment, but we do a lot of, 10% bleach solutions in for lab equipment with plants. So I don't see any problem with it. Sometimes we also use hot water as a seed treatment to break a seed coat. So that we can get it to germinate easier as well. It's a scarification kind of technique.
Yeah, I was thinking it would help keep the fungal mm-hmm. leaf blights down
mm-hmm.
on melons, like heirloom melons.
Yeah,
a
lot of those seeds, you know, if they're not the heirloom type, are treated with a fungicide or dusted with a fungicide so that during
right.
germination they germinate more efficiently or more effectively. They don't damp off as quickly.
But as far as protecting the plants from a foliar disease later on in the growing season,
yeah.
it's not going to be much of any benefit, basically.
Yeah, that's just during germination
right.
that it usually is most effective.
Okay, so it's not a magical solution to a long-term problem.
No.
We would like a few more of those.
We would. We would love that. That would be a great Christmas gift.
All right, John, thank you so much for your call. You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Next up, we've got Lynn on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Lynn.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I have kind of a question that's born from a very frustrating situation. Here in town, if there's a community garden, you're not allowed to have any vegetables unless you're on like food stamps or WIC.
Okay.
You can provide labor, but you may not even have a vegetable. So I told the community person, well, then I'm not going to volunteer. My problem is that my once extremely sunny yard has
mm-hmm.
now so much shade from trees
mm-hmm.
that, because that's why I went and asked them, because I can't grow tomatoes anymore. And I was wondering, is there something that I can grow that can only, well, that will still produce something in, you know, like 3 hours of sun,
mm-hmm.
Because I really like I like vegetables, and I don't know what will grow with the lack of straight sunlight.
Right. Well, you could try some of the leafy vegetables,
mm-hmm.
Things like lettuce and spinach. They might do okay.
Lettuce and spinach. Well,
mm-hmm.
radishes.
Radishes might be a possibility. Yes.
And carrots?
Not sure
no.
about carrots.
Okay.
But those plants that typically produce a fruit, like your tomatoes, your peppers, your
mm-hmm.
squash, your cucumbers, they typically need at least 6 hours of direct sun to really do well.
Okay, that's what,
So things that produce a fruit, probably not going to do very well in the shade, but things possibly like lettuce and spinach.
Okay.
Maybe some of the herbs, possibly.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You could probably try maybe kale or something of that nature.
Oh, kale. Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe some of the leafy things.
Okay.
The other possibility would be if you have a sunny spot, maybe putting a few things in a container or pot.
Oh, okay.
And so, you could put that in the front driveway or the front porch or whatever.
Or patio.
Mm-hmm. So you could plant maybe tomatoes or peppers or whatever in a pot or container. And so that would be another option.
And you just might want to look for those tomato or pepper varieties that are a little smaller. They're patio or container types.
Okay. Yeah, because I got all like super excited about having like freeze-dried tomatoes last year. So I bought a, what are those? Like a Beefmaster. Those grow really big tomatoes, correct? Okay. So, and I actually got a free plant from a place that was actually having a contest of who would get the biggest tomato first. Well, but the funny side of the story is by the time September rolled around, my tomatoes were the size of a golf ball. That I just went outside and just laughed. I just thought, okay, obviously it's true. These things need blazing sunlight.
They do.
And I do not have that anymore. So my little golf ball tomatoes were, well, that was, you know, a cosmic joke on me. Okay, well, I'll try some of these suggestions then.
All right, thanks a lot for your call,
thanks.
Lynn. Best of luck. You can join our conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. We had a caller who couldn't stay on the line earlier wondering if there are any grafting workshops coming up from Iowa State University Extension, and I couldn't quite get the calendar pulled up. Do you know if there are any coming up this spring?
I believe there are. And those are put on by Patrick O'Malley, and he's located in the Johnson County Extension Office. And if they were to call the office, I'm sure they could provide that information. But he has at least two planned, possibly more.
All right. And again, you can join our conversation with your calls, your questions, 866-780-9100, or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is a question from Becca in Ames. I was thinking about trying to grow fennel this year, but was wondering if it did well in central Iowa. Any tips?
It does do well. It's something that you can almost direct seed or find a couple of plants at a garden center and plant. Generally, the bulbous fennel, I have a little more tougher time with it. But the bronze fennel I've had for several years in my garden. And in fact, it reseeds with a vengeance and sometimes it's hard to get rid of. So, but it's pretty. It's a really attractive thing. And it's nice to use when you need that fennel. It's a nice edible herb. So,
all right.
So it should be pretty easy.
Here's a question from Ellen in Cedar Rapids. I have an overgrown hydrangea bush. Can I cut it back within a few inches of the ground? When should this be done? If this is too severe a pruning, how far back can I cut it?
Okay, kind of depends upon what type it is. If it's the kind of the old-fashioned hydrangea that grows about 3 to 4 feet tall, those typically you can prune right back to the ground. And I would do that basically in March. And they will grow back and they will still bloom by mid to late summer. If you have the larger type that grows to be maybe 6-8 foot tall, I would not do that. I'd be more inclined to maybe go out there and do some selective pruning where you simply might remove maybe 3 or 4 of the biggest ones near the ground and leave the rest.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. August is on the line in Bettendorf. Hi, August.
Hi. I love your show. About 65 or so years ago, maybe more, right after World War II, I lived in Linn County, and there are a lot of Bohemian families, Czechoslovakian families came over, and they brought these huge, big earthen crocks with them. How they got them here, I'll never know. Mm-hmm. So we went to school with some of these kids, and so they said, well, let's make some beer. Well, I didn't know from anything about beer. Well, so we went through about a half a dozen, maybe a dozen concoctions. We found one that was really good, and we kept all the ingredients and the time and the temperatures and all this, and we didn't know how to determine what we had. And so went down to the pharmacy and got an 8-ounce bottle. We poured this beer in it, and we got a little box and put Excelsior in it, put the bottle in, and we sent it to Ames. And about a week and a half later, we got a type letter. Well, we never received a type letter in our life. The type letter said, it's our opinion that your horse is dying of diabetes. You know, we didn't even have a horse.
Okay.
I love your show.
Thanks a lot for your call, August. See, Iowa State University Extension has answered every question.
This is true.
All right. Next up, Jerry's on the line in Webster City. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. I got a couple questions. I've had my garden in the same place for about, probably 20, 25 years. I have put compost on it to fertilize it. But now I can't, you know, I get it by the truckload in Webster City. We got a composting site where you can get it for free.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't get back there anymore. And I was wondering, what kind of fertilizer could I put on it? Because my garden just isn't doing very good. And I can't even, you know, my onions don't grow. I'm having trouble with that. And then all my other plants are just, it's like they're malnourished.
Well, I would probably suggest to maybe do a soil test.
Mm-hmm.
And see if there's some type of nutrient issue or possibly pH issue that needs to be corrected. If you don't do a soil test, I would simply go out with a balanced fertilizer, like a 10-10-10, and I would put on maybe 1 or 2 pounds per 100 square feet. But I would probably do a soil test just to see if there's some problem that I'm not aware of that a soil test may tell me.
Okay, can you do that through the extension service?
Yes, you can. Yes.
Okay. And how can you grow onions better? I mean, what does it take?
Well, onions aren't that difficult to grow. It kind of depends upon the type that you want. You have the option you can buy, you can plant either seed sets or plants. If you want something for storage, make sure that you buy a variety that stores well. And typically, if you want a storage onion, I would plant actual plants of a known variety. When you buy sets, you don't really buy a variety, you buy a color. And oftentimes
right.
they don't get that big and they don't store that well. So if you want something,
that's what I've been doing is buying sets, and they get about the size, you know, maybe an inch and a half in diameter, mm-hmm. and that's about as big as I'll get.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I would basically look at plants. And there are some really big ones. They may not store well, but if you want a really big one, you can buy those. If you want something that stores well, buy one of those varieties. Make sure it's a well-drained soil, plenty of sun, and they're not that difficult to grow, typically.
All right. Jerry, thanks a lot for your call. And let's get one more caller on the line. John's on the line in Davenport. Hi, John.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
What's your question?
I live in an apartment building. I only have northern exposure. You've been talking about containers.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any sort of vegetable that I could grow in containers in my northern exposure windows? I do have plant lights.
Okay. Well, I think the plant lights will allow you to grow certain things, yes. The north window by itself probably is not sufficient. But if you have, and it doesn't have to be any fancy or expensive grow lights, you can use fairly cheap, inexpensive shop lights. Just make sure the light source is very close to the plants, within a few inches. And I would try things like, again, your leafy things, like lettuce and spinach, some of the herbs. Those would be the first things that I would try.
All right, but growing a tomato plant there is not going to work out.
It's going to be really hard to grow that indoors. Even with light, it's going to be difficult to do. So I think I would stick more to the small things and the leafy things.
All right, and one last question. My African violets have small fuzzy white spots on the leaves and stems, mm-hmm. and some of the plants are looking terrible and drying up. Is this an insect infestation?
It could be an insect infestation like mealybug. It could also be powdery mildew, which is more of a disease. So check to make sure it's not staying too wet or it needs good air circulation. I might just remove one or two of the worst infected leaves and kind of wait and see. If it's a disease, it's going to probably cover more quickly, and then you'll know.
Okay, Lynn, I hope that answers your question. And Richard Geron and Cindy Haynes, thank you both so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Nice to dream a little bit about spring after mm-hmm. a week like we had. And we'll be back with Horticulture Day again, not next Friday, but the week after. We'll be back to weekly Hort Days starting in March, when spring really is near at hand. Richard Geron, horticulturist with Iowa State University Extension, and Cindy Haynes, associate professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins, and we've had Hort Day. Hey, News Buzz is coming up at noon on River to River. Ben Kiefer's here with us.
That's right, Charity. You have thinking and dreaming of spring. We have our feet firmly planted on ice. We're going to go ice fishing, one of a handful of things we'll explore on our NewsBuzz edition of River to River. Also, new rules for teen drivers that just went into effect last week. We'll talk about Iowa Secretary of State Matt Schultz running for Congress. That's Tom Latham's soon-to-be open seat. What else? Chris Christie?
Cyclone basketball, I think, is on your list.
Yes, it is. Funny you should mention. What a phenomenal start to this season for both the men and the women. Undefeated, Charity.
Undefeated.
We
it's
will
amazing.
Certainly. How could we miss talking about that?
I don't know, Ben. How could we?
We won't. We will not.
All right.
We'll make a swish.
That's coming up on River to River today at noon. I'm Charity Nebbe. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.